Welcome to It's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest in our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Florida lawmakers will head back to the drawing board when they return to the Capitol in January. They'll have to address ongoing problems with the state's standardized testing system and growing backlash against the use of the exams when it comes to students and teachers. They'll also revive a massive charter school reform bill and further plans to grow the state's school choice system. That's ahead on It's About Florida. This spring's Florida Standards Assessment was plagued by technical glitches and questions that did not align with state standards. Florida's school accountability system uses the test results to determine school grades, teacher evaluations and pay, and student promotions. But as Kate Payne reports, educators say it's time to reevaluate.
The test was rife with problems even before it was administered. Teachers said they weren't ready and worried students weren't comfortable with the new technology, nor the new learning standards. Technical glitches meant thousands of students struggled to complete their exams. A recent review of the Florida Standards Assessment found it valid, but questions remain on how the result will impact Florida schools. But the Association of Superintendents, Florida PTA, and Florida School Board Association agree. They have no confidence in school accountability. Students will not be penalized for poor scores this year, but the same scores will be used to determine school grades. For Florida School Board's Andrea Messina, this doesn't add up.
What makes sense to parents and what makes sense to the community at large and to educators is if the test is not valid for individual students, how then can it be applied in the aggregate?
Individual superintendents have publicly criticized the test and its role in the accountability system. Leon County Superintendent Jackie Pond says teachers shouldn't be penalized for poor scores either.
We're not going to use any of these test scores in order to give any teacher a punitive or negative evaluation based on data that's, you know, not correct in a testing environment that wasn't where students didn't have the opportunity to show, you know, what they had actually learned during the year.
Meanwhile, the Superintendents Association at large wants to forego issuing school grades this year. Superintendent Association Director and State Senator Bill Montford says poor school grades for incomplete student scores will further erode confidence in the system.
If a school receives a grade of an F, whether or not there's a monetary penalty to that or not, there's still a penalty because that has far-reaching implications not only for the students and for the teachers, but the community as well.
But Senate Education Chief John Legg says that some schools should take a good look at test results.
We have some counties very close to Tallahassee, not Leon County, but right next to Leon County, where almost 40% of the students are scoring in the bottom quartile, the bottom 25% of our entire state. Now, we could just simply ignore that and say, hey, you know, this was a test. Let's not look at that. But you know what? I think that school system needs a good hard look.
But for School Boards Association head Andrea Messina, the issue isn't about scores or punishment. It's an issue of credibility. And she says she's not alone.
So it's not just the education community that recognizes the problem, and that's why we have such great concern about the credibility of the entire system, because everyone says, slow down a minute, things just don't seem right.
The Superintendents Association is asking for new legislation to take a step back and reevaluate. The proposed changes would mean insulating schools from poor scores and revamping the accountability system. No bill has been filed yet, but the plans could find a supporter in Bill Montford.
Let's take a look at the recommendations that have been made. How can we implement those and get them in place by the 2016 administration of the FSA? But we can't be punitive. We've got to do it right. Our students deserve that. Teachers deserve that. Our communities deserve that. And it's too important for us to not have confidence in the accountability system.
Educators agree that the accountability system needs to be addressed, but with no such bills yet filed for the upcoming session, they'll have to wait and see what lawmakers have in mind. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida's superintendents, school boards, and parent-teacher associations are in agreement.
The state's new standardized test gets an F. The state has been transitioning to new standards and with them a new exam, and it all went into effect this year. The results have been less than stellar. Education associations had warned for years the state was moving too fast, but their requests for timeouts and pauses have been denied. Now they say it's time for the Florida legislature to listen, and they believe their recommendations may get some traction this year. Senator Bill Monford is head of the Florida Association of District School Superintendents. His organization recently sent out a letter stating local superintendents have lost confidence in the state school accountability system. Now he's ready to do something about it. But as a Democrat in a Republican majority legislature, can he get anything done? Monford says he thinks so. Welcome to It's About Florida. How has it been going?
Going very well. Thank you for being here today.
So what's happening now is that the Department of Education is now setting cut scores. It is trying to determine what percentage of the questions equate to a passing or, you know, what people would recognize as a passing or failing score. And these things are going to go into effect. They're going to affect teacher performance evaluations. In some cases, they are going to be used eventually to place students. And that is where we are now, that this test is now being used to set the new floor for the state's new standards. And there's a bit of discord over whether or not we should even be doing that because we still haven't resolved the issues with GUS.
Let's go back to a basic 101 approach, if you will. First of all, superintendents in Florida began in 2013, mm-hmm. saying we will have, the state will have issues with that. In 2013, I quote, as Florida moves forward implementing a new assessment, we must ensure that these new standards and assessments are aligned with all aspects of the accountability system. However, the overly aggressive implementation schedule is not realistic and is problematic. That was in 2013. Mm-hmm. In 2014, today, quote, the integrity of the Florida accountability system, including school grades, is in question. Florida school grade system has been seen multiple changes over the past few years, including 34 changes in the 2011-12 system year alone. The next year, 2015, quote, there has been much change in the overall accountability system, including school grades. Changes in accompanying timeline have created circumstances that raise serious concerns among superintendents. So the difficulty we experienced this last spring was not a surprise to school superintendents. I don't think they were surprised to teachers and parents and students either. We knew that there would be difficulty. But with that being said, that underlies the recommendation that we had, which was an industry standard acceptance, with industry standard acceptance, if you will, that says any high-stakes exam such as the FSA should not be used the first time it's given, not the first year. Mm-hmm. It should be a beta test. Go ahead and give the test, but don't count it for high-stakes purposes. Certainly don't count it for student promotion and retention and graduation requirement. Certainly don't tie them to teacher evaluations and pay. Don't tie it to school grades. That's not what you do when you have a high-stakes exam. You give it first year. Most of the time, you give it 2 years. So you work out the bugs, and then you can have an exam for which the results are valid and dependable. The results of this past administration of the FSA is not dependable, not accurate, and therefore not valid.
The Superintendents Association says it's lost faith in this exam. But I have another question here, and that is, why have lawmakers not listened? I mean, you are a state senator. Mm-hmm. You sit on several education committees. We've seen the legislature making changes to sort of soften the landing. But even despite all of the outcry there was last year, it seems like this system is steadily moving forward, problems and all.
The answer to that is real simple. Even though in this case we have, of the 67 school superintendents in Florida, 63 of them were at our meeting, and the others agreed to it as well. So this is not just an association making these concerns. These are the real-life, hands-on professionals that run the 67 school districts in Florida are all saying the same thing, and that is we have lost confidence in the system. And this is not a gotcha situation. This is not a we-told-you-3-years-ago situation. This is a simple matter of the experts in the field. And by the way, not just superintendents. You have school board members. You have teachers. Most importantly, you have parents and students who are saying, this system is broken. Don't use it for high-stakes purposes. Don't abandon the system. Superintendents do not want the accountability system abolished or abandoned. Quite to the contrary. And contrary to what some may say, superintendents have always been adamant supporters of a an accountability system with high standards, an accountability system, though, that has to be accurate and valid and dependable. The worst thing we can do is have an accountability system where people have lost confidence. And I would suggest to you, it's not just superintendents, parents and teachers, and unfortunately, students now are beginning to lose confidence in our accountability system. That can damage Florida. It can damage an accountability system that we all used to have a lot of faith in. Remember, a lot of the professionals, a lot of the parents have 15 years of work in this accountability system. There are no superintendents, no teacher that I know that wants to abandon the system. Parents and others want a voice. They want an accountability system that is fair and accurate and valid. To do that, we believe we need to pause. There's nothing wrong with pausing. Let's take a look at the system. How do we tweak it? How do we make it better so that we can regain confidence in our system?
So how do you propose we do that? Right now, again, DOE is still setting cut scores. Should they move forward with that process, or you know, should they stop it altogether? What are some of the solutions?
There are two or three things. One is we should not issue school grades this year. It's interesting that in the validity report itself says something like, there have been so many issues, so many problems, that individual student results should not be used for their promotion and graduation requirements. Leave that, most of that, up to the school. Very wise decision. But the Department of Education and the report here says, but collectively, you can use it to grade schools. Now, to some of us, that doesn't make sense. If the scores individually should not be used for students, how can they be, collectively, how can they be used to grade a school? And keep in mind that one of the underlying strengths of the accountability system as we used to know it was it to grade a school, student growth entered into that grade. In other words, if you had a student entering the fifth grade that was reading on third grade level, if at the end of the year the student was reading, had gained a year and 3 months in reading, that was a tremendous amount of growth. So that student, the school, got credit, if you will, for the academic growth of that student. That's the way it should be. But this year, Department of Education insists on giving grades based on nothing but performance. In other words, student growth won't be measured because you've only given the exam 1 year, and there's nothing to measure it for. So we're going back. We haven't given school grades on performance alone since the early 2000s. Why are we doing this? Here's what will happen. If you grade schools simply on performance, school superintendents and parents and others can just about tell you what school grades will be before they even come out, if it's only based on performance. That's why we need performance and student growth in calculating these grades. And you can't do that with the results that we have.
What about the argument that says, well, we at least have to issue a grade so we know where we are starting from?
Well, but to give a grade for a school only on performance, that ignores the growth that those students had over the past year. That was the beauty of our accountability system. You could have a student that was below grade level, but that teacher and that student's parents worked hard and progressed enough, they got credit for it. You know, it's like, you know, I need to lose weight. I lose 15 pounds. And this is a true story. And I was real proud. My doctor said, but you're still too fat. Now, that's true. But I wanted a little bit of credit for the 15 pounds I lost. Mm-hmm. And that's what our accountability system used to do. We used to give credit for the growth. And we need to do that to more accurately grade these schools.
Well, I've heard districts saying, you know, let's drop the Florida Standards Assessment and let's go to something like the SAT, the ACT, the Stanford 10, something that is already there and vetted. Is that even a possibility?
Sure, it's a possibility. And
is it feasible?
Yes, it's feasible. Let's talk about that for a moment. We're asked all the time. You've got the ACT, you've got the SAT. You got dual enrollment, you've got AP exams, mm-hmm. you have all of these in place. And a good friend of mine in the Senate asked me, hey, my daughter, he said, does very well on all the AP classes. She knocks it out of the roof. She's done well on SCT and SAT. Why are they having to do this? That's because we require it in Florida. Now, is there another alternative? Yes, there are alternatives, and we're looking at those now. I know some of my colleagues in the Senate are preparing some bills. We're looking at them myself to see, is there an alternative to this? Let's keep in mind, first of all, how much money we're spending. We're spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on just the test alone. Is it worth it? Well, we need to take a look at that. Now, but back to your question, are there alternatives to that? That's what we're looking at. You know, if a student knocks the top out of the ACT, should that student be worried about taking an FSA exam? And then let's look deeper than that too. Let's look at teacher evaluation and pay. Mm-hmm. We've got to make sure that our evaluation system is accurate and valid, and make absolutely sure that our teachers are evaluated and paid on data that's solid and valid.
I know, I think it was Senator Hayes who recently asked DOE for a copy of all of their testing contracts. So obviously, this is a growing bipartisan issue as well.
The nice thing about this issue is it doesn't fall along party lines. There are Republicans and Democrats alone who have the same concern and the same support for a good, sound accountability system.
What else are you expecting to pop up next year? You all have been meeting in committee weeks. You guys are going to continue meeting in committee weeks until January. And already there have been a lot of different conversations, not just about testing, but other issues. Mm-hmm. There is a renewed push for a really big charter school reform bill. Mm-hmm. And talk about, you know, changing the way districts approve or deny charter applications. We've heard that one coming back up. What else do you see on the horizon?
You'll see a lot of discussion. You'll see a lot of bills, I think, on the whole charter school issue. Again, let's keep in mind that charter schools, when they really began in the mid-90s, charter schools were designed to go into areas where public schools was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also designed to remove from the charter school effort a lot of what some would consider to be burdensome or restrictive rules and regulations. In other words, if you have a public school that is struggling, then let's move a charter school in, let's open it up, and let's change the rules, if you will, and the regulations, and let's see what we can do to help those students be more successful and change a struggling school into a successful school. I supported charter schools. I still support charter schools. But I have some serious reservations about the way some charter schools operate, from not only from a facility standpoint, but also from the academic standpoint as well. Whatever time a student spends in any school, whether it be charter or public or private school or homeschool, you don't recapture that time. So it is our job in the legislature to ensure that whatever option our parents choose for their children, whether it be homeschool, charter, public, private, that those students get every opportunity to be successful and to grow at least a year for every year they're in school. So I think what you'll see in the legislature this year, you'll see some various bills addressing that, especially in the terms of facilities and where schools are needed. Do we need a charter school right in the middle of other charter schools public schools that are successful? For example, if the public school system, if the school board and superintendent in a district, if they want to build a school in an area, there are certain regulations that they must follow, certain data that they must provide the Department of Education, so that Department of Education will allow that school board to build a school in a particular area on a site. We have instances in the state where the school board would have been denied to build the opportunity to build a school on the exact same site that a charter school can build on. Now, that's not a good use of tax dollars. I mean, the reason we set this up, the process where you can build schools, was to ensure that we built schools where they're needed to protect the taxpayers' dollars. So if you don't have a need for a school in an area, why would we use tax dollars to fund building a charter school where it's not needed? Those are some real simple questions that we've got to look at.
I know a couple of months ago, Mr. Jim Horn went before the State Board of Education and said that funding facilities takes up a large portion of charter school dollars. And he seemed to suggest that, you know, if something isn't done to address the issue of facilities in charter schools, some would have to close. Charters have, for the past couple of years, been asking for a portion of local tax dollars to shore up their facility budgets. And I'm wondering if that is not going to be an issue that comes back around this year.
It would be. It's been an issue for the last 3 or 4 years and will continue to be an issue. But there's two sides to that coin. Mm-hmm. If you're asking for more tax dollars, then you should not be afraid to accept additional rules and regulations. So, again, it's a matter of tax dollars. Are charter schools public schools? Absolutely they are. And the majority of our charter schools do a great job. But if you're going to want and to accept and demand more tax dollars, then you should be able to also say, I am willing to take the additional rules and regulations to ensure that our students are going to school in a safe environment that meets same state safety regulations, and that there is a need for this facility in this site in this county. You can't have it both ways. I mean, you in my opinion, you got to look at both sides of the coin.
And I know even just last week in the House, there was a conversation about even perhaps loosening the double F standard. In a charter school, if you get two Fs 2 years in a row, you're shut down. But that may or may not change this next year.
But let me go back to my earlier statement. Can you imagine having a child or a grandchild in that charter school with two Fs in a row? Do you want your child to go for a third year in there? I mean, at what point is that charter school held accountable? That school, that charter school, that charter board, those teachers need to be held accountable. It's not, you can't go back and recapture that time. Let's keep in mind also that charter schools are not supposed to pick and choose what students they have, nor are they supposed to dismiss a student, withdraw invitation, because a child has poor attendance or poor behavior, or the parent can't volunteer in the school. Charter schools are not supposed to do that. Do we have instances where that has occurred? Yes, we do. That's not right. That is not treating those students correctly.
But I think, too, with the double F, though, the same could be true of public schools. Mm-hmm. We have issue with public schools who have gotten Fs 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, there are some districts that have been F districts for a really long time.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And that's why the Department of Education mm-hmm. has a right and a responsibility to enter and inject themselves into those districts, which they have done in some districts. Now, unfortunately, in some cases, the needle still hasn't moved. So we're not certainly not pointing just at charter schools. We're pointing to any public school that continues to fail. Obviously, there needs to be some corrective action, obviously some quick action in there. And what does that mean? Well, there are provisions already in the law where you change the principals, you change the teachers, you do whatever is necessary to make sure that those schools change. But now, the way to do that is not to get rid of the students. Public schools, if they're an F school, they don't go in there and just say, okay, we're going to withdraw these students because they don't perform well. And all charter schools don't do that either. There are some that have.
What is your take on the concept of universal school choice, public school choice? We saw that come out last year in the House. A student could go anywhere, any district, any school, any state, and across the state as long as there's room.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you call, one would call, I guess, ultimate parental choice. Mm-hmm. However, you know, there's also the responsibility we have as a state to ensure that every child has those opportunities. So if you have a parent with means that wants to go to another school on the other side of the county, shouldn't we also provide an opportunity for the other parents who don't have the means to give their child the same opportunity? So we can't allow us to get into a situation where the haves can have what they want and the have-nots can't. We have an obligation to make sure that we have a balanced approach, and that's what government's for. So, you know, I believe in parental choice, and I, you know, when I was superintendent, I did. But there's a limit to it. I want to be able to provide as much choice as we can. But again, we have an obligation to the district or as a whole or the organization as a whole.
So if that proposal came before the Senate, would you be a no?
No, I would have to look at the proposal. I have to look at it and see what it would, you know, what impact it would have. You know, if you go back to athletics just for a moment, if you can have 15 members on a team, and I brought this up the other day, you have a child that's been in a school for 3 years and working his way up to make the team and been on the team for 3 years, and then you have a couple other students who choose to come to that school from another school that bumps that child off and not on the team anymore. And that's real life. That has happened. So that parent and that student just gets removed from the team because there's no more room, then you say something's wrong. Does that child not have a choice as well? So this is not a simple matter that we can give every parent everything they want. We operate a system. We are part of an organization, if you will, not just in athletics, but academics as well. It's the same thing as with class size. You know, parents have shown up and said, I want my child in Mrs. Smith's class. Well, Mrs. Smith's class, kindergarten class, has 18. There's no room. Well, I insist that my child be in Mrs. Smith's class.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? You go in and remove Mrs. Jones' child out of that class? I don't think so.
Well, Senator, thank you so much for joining me here on It's About Florida.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks to Senator Bill Monford. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter.